If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Let's go back for one more second and talk about your addiction. What are you addicted to?
Well, I was addicted to...
What happens when you feel like you want to go back to
There's
that?
No going back. Go to Anarchy?
Yeah.
She mainly rescues... special need goal.
So you have an amazing platform on Instagram called Pitbulls and Addicts.
Yes.
Explain how that got started.
And they're like, we'll get the door open for you. So they walk me upstairs, they kick the door, and the dog's not there. The dog's up in the attic. All I hear is like nails walking, and he's like, good luck.
How long do you think she had been up there by herself? These are dogs that have been
near death,
yeah. Abused, correct. Neglected.
I have dogs that have their legs cut off. In 2018, somebody threw a cocktail and tried to burn me down. That was an eye opener for me.
What do you think about Dave Portnoy and what he's done with Miss Peach? And his awareness of Pitbulls.
You don't want to talk to me about it.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Guys, I am so excited about this episode. Obviously, two of the biggest things that I am obsessed with, which is animals and people who are misunderstood, right? So I have a great guest. His name is Mike Favor. He's the passionate founder of Broken Souls Rescue, a unique nonprofit organization dedicated to rescuing not only abandoned and abused pit bulls, but also supporting individuals struggling with addiction and mental health challenges. You can find him on Instagram at his handle, Pitbulls and Addicts, where he kind of takes you through every animal he saves and gives good advice and is a sounding board for people struggling with addiction. Through his transformative approach, Mike combines his deep love for animals with a commitment to human recovery, fostering a safe and healing environment for both dogs and people. His mission goes beyond traditional animal rescue, offering a second chance at life to those often overlooked by society, whether they're four-legged or fighting inner battles. His work is a testament to the power of compassion and the ability to rebuild broken lives, creating a community where recovery and rescue go hand in hand. I was lucky enough to meet him in person and sit down with him on my most recent trip to New York City, where we talked about his life story, which is just as empowering as what he does now. So please sit back, enjoy my conversation with Pitbulls and Addicts, Mike Favor. Mike, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you for having me. Happy
to meet you finally.
Pleasure, yes.
I feel like I've been following you forever.
Okay.
I had first of all, I love dogs, okay? So I like dogs more than I like people.
Me too.
Which I feel like you do.
Yes, yeah. 100%.
I started with Brussels Griffins. I have a Pomeranian, all dogs that I've spent money on, okay? Mm-hmm. And then something happened in my life where I, by chance, rescued a dog. And okay. It's a part pit bull, part Siberian Husky. Crazy dog.
Misunderstood.
But I went to animal control okay. with my dog. I didn't start there. I started at the ASPCA. It was closed. It was a snow day. Mm-hmm. My daughter and myself and her friend Olivia, we end up saying, let's go volunteer for the day at animal control. Worst place in Manhattan. I mean, that place is so scary. No, I had nightmares just from being there. I was in tears the whole time to watch those dogs, how loud it is, how hot it is in there. The cages face a wall. Mm-hmm. They don't even see each other. All they're doing is barking. And my daughter and her friend came over crying. Mom, you have to get this dog. This is our dog. And I looked at the dog and I was just like, I can't leave it here. It's going to make me cry. I'm like, I can't leave this dog. But I didn't want to leave any of the dogs. Okay. So that was the first time that I had a real rescue that was looks pit bull. I was like, how am I going to handle this dog? Best decision I ever
you
made.
I learned.
So most misunderstood breed, yeah. For sure.
I love to hear, I hate to hear that, but I also love it.
Yeah.
The reason why I love it is because when I first started this mission in 2017, mm-hmm. that's exactly what I wanted to change. I wanted to be the change for sheltered animals.
Yeah.
You know, dogs end up needing rescue because of being failed by humans.
Right.
I feel that the ACC is ran by failed humans that do not care about the animals.
Yeah.
They care more about a paycheck. They care more about holidays on the weekend, getting home at 5 o'clock.
Right.
And more importantly, they just don't care about the animals. The conditions that they live in, it's seen all over. It's not made up. It's not a joke and it's not a lie, but it's looked right past.
Yeah.
And I feel like the only people that could change that are the people that actually do the work. So that's why I wanted to separate myself from that shelter.
Right.
And that's how I started to create my safe haven. I call it a safe haven. People say shelter. You could call it whatever you want. You know, where there's a bunch of dogs living could be considered a shelter. Could be considered, you know, a jail cell. Like, whatever you want to, like, you know, I look at ACC and I think about jail, you know. And I also think that, you know, the prison system is also broken. I feel that if they did the same thing that I do for dogs, if they did it with the guys in prison, that we would have men coming out of prison as changed men trying to make a difference in the world, because it's not a life for anybody.
And we have a mutual friend, Zach Scow, who does something.
He
does something similar. I've had him on the show.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start working with him to try and take what he's implemented in California and bring it in all the states, because I think what he does for prisoners, what he does for animals that are on the euthanasia list is so phenomenal and life changing.
It's truly amazing to actually sit there. I've met with those men.
Yeah.
I met with 20-something of them 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And just to hear their stories on how they didn't think that they had a chance in this world.
Right. And when everyone Zach came has in given with up the dog on them.
And Zach had come in with a dog, and their entire life has changed to the point that they got early release, and now they leave prison with a purpose and also a skill. Mm-hmm. They leave that prison, that program, as dog trainers.
Right.
Being a dog trainer is very difficult. A lot of people just think it's basic training. Like, these guys come out, they know how to evaluate a dog. They know how to address a dog. Like, you know, a broken soul is a broken soul. Mm. So when you have a recovered man who actually comes across this dog who truly needs him, it makes that man feel like he's worth something. And it's not only prisoners. I'm an addict and I didn't make it to prison, but it's the same, you know, I come from the same background.
So, okay, you mentioned the word purpose, which I think is part of where your story began. But
correct.
Let's rewind for a minute about your childhood, about your trauma, your addiction, and how you found your purpose.
Yeah, so I was, I was raised by a narcotics detective.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I was also raised by gangsters on Little Italy. I'm actually working there right now. So I was one of five. I was the fourth child. My parents were amazing. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. My father was, you know, a narcotics detective, but he worked four or five jobs to do whatever he had to do for his family.
Okay.
So what happened with me was that, you know, I was mentally abused at 11 years old by a dentist. I had a dentist. I went in for some cavities, and this man slapped his hand on the table and screamed in my face that I would have no teeth in my mouth by the age of 30.
Oh, Okay.
And at that point in my life, I just felt totally like worthless and that I was never going to amount to anything.
Was that something personal or that's just how he treated everybody?
I don't know because I never spoke about it.
Wow.
Ironically, I spoke when I did come forth and when I changed my life around and I started to study my life because I did want to make a difference.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the root of my problem was because I was so comfortable for so many years being that man, mm-hmm. or that broken man.
Mm-hmm.
When I started to study is when I really remembered like that exact moment. Ironically, a kid down the block from me told me that dentist pulled a tooth out of his mouth with no Novocaine when he was like 16 years old. It was like 20-something years. And it scarred him too, and he ran from the dentist as well to the point that he had to have major surgery as well. So I think that it's been done to many kids in his chair. But, you know, it just...
Well, it started there with somebody making you feel badly about yourself.
Yeah, it just made me feel like... Because teeth are very important. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed already. I did have insurance. It's just that I never went because I didn't care about the dentist at that point.
Okay.
I didn't think of my future with it, you know. Mm-hmm. Hereditary, I don't have the best of teeth. You know, some people are blessed with these beautiful smiles. You know, we don't have the best of teeth, but I definitely could have went to the dentist and got my teeth fixed.
Okay.
So from 11 years old, I was mentally abused, and it just made me feel like just defeated as a little boy, and I became like this kid I became a bully. I was always in trouble. I love violence. I love to... You know, I had a problem with any type of law enforcement. I had a problem with. I just had a problem with anybody
so
in authority.
You would talk back.
I would talk back. I would fight. I would spit.
I didn't care about the consequences.
I didn't care about anything or anyone.
And
I
was what did your dad say to you about this?
Well, in front of my father, I didn't act this way.
Got it.
You know, in front of my parents, I was. You know, I had a thing like growing up. I was always like drawn to the older people. So like, if I was at a party, I'd always be sitting with older people because that's where I felt comfortable.
Okay.
But when I was around certain people, I acted a certain which way, you know, so, but, you know, I never really spoke about my trauma because I was raised by a tough narcotics detective and also gangsters that, you know, you just don't talk about it. Men get through it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, nowadays I kind of tell people the complete opposite. You know, I don't think that I would have become the man that I become if I didn't, if I spoke about it at an early age because it would have, number one, would have been fixed. But number two is that I would have let it out. So, you know, when you get comfortable being something that you're not, that's all you turn to, you know. So instead of learning how to get through situations and you know, address the inner side of me, I was just looking on the outside of me. But
right.
Meanwhile, you know, my teeth were rotting out of my face. And, you know, the only thing that I could do was cover it up by being somebody that I'm not.
Got it.
You know, so many years later, you know, it just got so bad. I mean, I remember sitting in bed and hiding it from everybody. I would be popping my own abscesses in my mouth and sucking the infection out because, you know, that's the only thing that I knew and that's what I was comfortable doing and lying to everybody. When they're like, your face is swollen, I'd be like, oh, I just have a toothache. But meanwhile, it's an abscess. And, you know, the oral pain really, you know, for 20-something years, it was unbearable, but I bared with it.
They say that when you have something wrong in your teeth, it could actually like kill you. Like there's
it could go to your brain.
Yeah,
and that was one of the reasons why I actually made a choice to make a phone call and ask for help. It got to the point where I was extremely nervous if this was going to happen because my problems had gotten so bad. I called a woman, Jamie, that I knew from 42nd Street, and she worked for a dentist. And I said, like, what type of dentist do you work for?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's about this time that I address this problem. And she's like, what problems are you talking about? So I said, can I call you? And I called her and I told her exactly what happened. And I asked her, I said, you know, I don't have the finances to just come in and, mm-hmm. and give all this money. I don't have credit. You know, like, I just run my whole life down to the ground. And, you know, I need help. But I'm not looking for anything for free. I'm just looking for somebody who will give me a payment plan. So she said, just come in. Dr. Regan will definitely take care of you. So when I grabbed enough strength to go and face a dentist, I walked into the dentist. My palms were dripping sweat.
Aww.
I was nervous. I was crying. And I told him exactly my story. But I've already been 3 years into this mission, and they heard about me.
Right.
So he was honored to help me. He didn't know what the problem was. Like, you know, I didn't speak about this because
when
I was
just... When you say mission, you mean
Pitbulls and
Addicts.
Dog like,
mission.
I changed my life around.
Right,
and, you know, he was super proud of me, but not too many people knew about the reason why I was who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So when I sat down with him and I told him this story in more detail, you know, it touched him in a way that he wanted to help me. So he did all pro bono work. He was a specialist
Amazing.
In Manhattan. That man saved my life. I could tell you that Dr. Reagan and Dr. Chen are the two reasons why I'm able to stand up and speak with people proudly and not be ashamed of who I am.
Right.
You know, like I notice now and I realize how important a smile is and how important it is just on an everyday. Forget about the smiles and looking good. You know, like I'm able to eat and not be in pain.
Right.
I'm not worried about my teeth falling out of my face. I'm not worried about anything anymore. Like that was the only thing that was holding me down. And the reason why it was holding me down is because it's the one thing that a human can't fix themselves.
That's true.
You know, mostly anything else you could fix. You could figure it out.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, again, if it's a disease, if it's a cancer, obviously you need doctors. But in my mind, it was the one thing that was holding me back from becoming the man I am today. So when I did finally go and address it, he said, you know, that everybody in the office was fully on board to work with me and get me through this. And he meant it. And,
right.
you know, the woman who did my first cleaning, like, I was just so embarrassed. And she was just like, listen, we've dealt with this before. Like, you know, like, I work with children. So anytime you're uncomfortable, raise your hand. I'll stop. I want to help you get through this. And at that point, I realized, like, I'm in a good place, you know,
right.
like, and it kind of made me feel at home. So that from that day forward, I had no problem going to a dentist. I had no problem going in for surgery. I also thought that, you know, when they removed the teeth that were no good anymore, that I was going to, you know, have to sit for months and not be able to eat and, you know, all of the things that you just see what's going on. You know, people have an oral surgery, they can't eat for a month, or they, you know, have no teeth in their mouth for 6 months, and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I was just ready and willing to do it,
right.
you know. And Harrison Chen ripped out 17 teeth in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
I sat 45 minutes, he ripped, and they were all such clean pulls because he's a specialist. The next day I woke up, there was no swelling. I was able to go to work. I was able to feel that there's a brighter future ahead.
Right.
And then, you know, within a couple of months, I was going back and forth. They were, you know, doing their work. And, you know, I walked out of there about a year later, and I was able to smile.
Well, you look great.
Thank you.
You have a great smile.
You know, I never thought that this was going to happen, to be honest with you.
Right.
But it happened, and I feel like, you know, as long as I continue to do good and to spread love and be a good man, that good things are going to happen to me.
This episode is brought to you by Holistic Goddess. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. It boosts focus. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. It nurtures comfort. It gently addresses vaginal dryness with black cohosh. It's comforting to have that support during this time. It has natural ingredients. I love that it uses these ingredients like sage and rhubarb extract. If you're going through similar changes like perimenopause and menopause, I highly recommend giving this a try. It's been a relief for me, and I think it could help you too. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com for 15% off using code UNDERSTOOD. Hey there, Misunderstood listeners. I'm super excited to share today's sponsor with you, LolaVie, the amazing hair care line created by none other than Jennifer Aniston. That's right, the icon herself. As the weather shifts and we all start feeling those seasonal changes, it's the perfect time to refresh your hair care routine. And LolaVie has just what you need. Now, let me tell you about their latest game changer, the Exfoliate and Detox Scalp Shampoo. This product is a real powerhouse. It's two-in-one formula that works as both a scalp scrub and a clarifying shampoo. We're talking activated charcoal powder, bamboo extract, and gentle AHAs that detoxify and balance your scalp, while vegetable ceramides and B vitamins reduce flaking and irritation. It's got everything your scalp needs to breathe, especially when you're dealing with dry, itchy conditions this time of the year. Plus, it's packed with alfalfa sprouts and pea peptides to help your hair look thicker and fuller. Honestly, since I've been using it, my hair feels lighter, fresher, and healthier. You know when you have one of those hair days where everything just feels right? That's what L'Olivree brings to the table. Oh, and don't forget about their B Pro 3 Bond technology. It's like your own personal hair defense system against damage. Whether you've got straight, curly, or wavy locks, this stuff works wonders. And the best part, you can enjoy that fresh, spa-like experience with the intensive repair treatment right after your scalp cleanse. It's a total game changer for you. Hashtag Sunday Reset Routine. And here's a special treat just for you. L'Olivree is offering 15% off your entire order. All you have to do is use code Rachel15 at checkout. That's right, 15% off when you go to L'Olivree.com. Again, use code Rachel15, that's R-A-C-H-E-L-15, to grab your discount. Seriously, if Jennifer Aniston is behind it, you know it's worth trying. So don't miss out. Remember, once you buy, make sure to tell them where you heard about L'Olivree. It helps support our show. Your hair will definitely thank you for it. So let's go back for one more second and talk about your addiction.
Yeah.
What are you addicted to?
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Well, I was addicted to cocaine and alcohol.
Okay. And was there a rock bottom that you hit at some point?
Let me change the question.
How did it affect your life so you knew you had to stop?
Well, it affected my life in many different ways. The one reason that I felt that I had to stop was because I was running from my father for so long.
Mm-hmm.
My father would call me every morning to see if I wanted to go have breakfast. And I said that I was busy working. But meanwhile, I was on my way home to sniff coke in my garage. At 9 o'clock in the morning, I already set my job up and I was on my way back home.
What job did you have?
I was just a fly-by-night contractor, but I had men working for me. You know, the one thing that my father did raise me was to work for my
You had a work ethic.
Yeah.
You showed up.
100%. I always showed up.
You had an addiction.
Correct. I had an addiction that I just let totally take me. It took me out. I never lost track of you have to earn to survive.
Right. But you were lying to people.
I was lying
through
my teeth.
And you didn't like that.
Yeah, no.
Through your teeth.
Through my teeth, too. No, I mean, I didn't like the man that I was. But like I said, it started to affect me because my father was calling me every day to go for breakfast. I wasn't able to see my dad. I was lying about everything. I would get out of the shower. I would put a hooded sweatshirt on. I didn't want to look at myself in the mirror. My teeth were rotting away. I was just angry. I was mad at the world. I felt like I was amounting to anything. And truly, I felt like I was dead inside. Many times I drove over the bridge and I was just like, man, if there's a God, please don't let me end up at my coke dealer's house. And 20 minutes later, I'm at my coke dealer's house. And, you know, I started sniffing coke from the minute I woke up to the minute I went to sleep.
You did.
Yeah, because I used to drink to sniff and sniff to drink. So when it got to the point of just running from everything and everyone, you know, I got locked up a couple of times. And, you know, just being that guy, and I just knew that I wasn't raised
for
to
what?
Be this person.
For drugs? For
drugs.
Altercations?
Drugs and violence. Okay. You know, nothing serious.
So what changed for you to find this new purpose?
Well, I knew that I wasn't this person. Okay. My father raised me with morals and respect. I basically
and
just
by the
turned,
way, if he found out you were doing drugs, would he have flipped because of his history and what he did?
It's not that he would have flipped. He would have been more disappointed because he raised us different.
Got
you know,
it.
When
okay.
we were growing up, I was literally my father's right-hand man. My father used to do wiretaps and have to take the tapes and put them in the lock boxes for court and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I used to sit there in the office with him and, you know, partake in this as a little kid, like, watching them wiretap from here to Columbia and, you know, the drug bust and all that stuff. Like, he'd always come home and show me pictures. He'd come home with, you know, the macked out vans that for the surveillance and all that. So I don't think that he would flip because flipping wouldn't work with me.
Sure.
I think that he would, you know, and we did have a couple of conversations about it, and I promised him I was done. But on March 26, 2016, I meant it. And ironically, on March 27th, I sat down with him and I opened up. And I told him I was ready and willing to do whatever it took. I had searched for programs. I couldn't afford them. I wasn't going to ask him to do it because I don't feel like I should have put my father in debt. We're not. My father didn't have money. And I said that I was ready and willing to do it, no matter what it took, that I was going to go from a zero to a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me and he said, Michael, if there's one man in this world that could do it, it's you.
So what do you think made you get to that point of wanting to change and wanting to stop? Because for a lot of people, it takes a rock bottom.
Yeah, I mean, my rock bottom was like I felt like I was a mountain to anything, and I was a mountain to anything. But, you know, more important is that I wasn't raised to be this kid. And
right.
I think that most addicts are not raised to be who they become.
Right.
And just embarrassed, and I didn't want to run from anybody, and I just wanted to...
You wanted to own up to it.
Yeah, I just wanted to be the man that my father raised me to be.
So how long have you been sober?
I'm sober 8 years.
Wow. And what happens when you feel like you want to go back to
There's
that?
There's no going back.
You don't. It
no.
doesn't occur
no.
to you.
Never. I mean, you know, like I've went back to cigarettes. You know, that's the only thing. My only addiction vice would be a cigarette. But again, as far as cocaine and alcohol, it will never go into my body again. I don't need it. I don't want it. I know what it did to me. I know what. And now in 2024, there is nothing pure. And it's just not worth my life.
No, it's so
you know,
dangerous.
Everything is, yeah. So when I was using, it was a different time.
Yeah.
It was kind of pure.
Now it's really interesting because people can just try it once and that could be
yeah,
the last time
done.
They try anything.
Correct.
You know.
And that's with anything. That's with a Xanax pill.
Yeah.
Any type of pill form is being crushed here
right.
in the States and fentanyl is
but
being
But it's not like
it.
When we were younger where people
no.
would use it recreationally and not think about
yeah.
it, just take it from the person on the
yeah.
street.
I've literally sniffed coke with everybody. Doctors, lawyers, professors,
yeah.
Detectives, FDNY. I've sniffed coke with everybody. It was just the most social thing
yeah.
to do. You know, it's like everybody would like look down upon the junkie on the corner that's you know all doped out and who has the lean going. Look at that junkie, but meanwhile they're doing bumps
they're
of cocaine.
Yeah.
So you know drugs are drugs and drug addiction is drug addiction. It just matters what you're addicted to. But society doesn't label cocaine and alcohol as real drugs.
Yeah,
you know it's a party drug and alcohol is accepted by everyone and everything. So that's what made it easier for me. Everywhere
yeah.
I turned, somebody was partying with me.
Right, right. They enabled it.
It wasn't like, here's a needle you want to shoot, or here's a crack pipe you want to smoke.
Right.
You know, because when I was always raised that you have to show up.
Yep.
No matter what's going on, you have to show up for your family, you got to show up for your friends. Shit hits the fan, you better be ready and willing to do whatever it takes. And I always said, like, from seeing the people in the clubs, like, you know, I was always in a nightclub, and you would see people in K-holes and, you know, just a mess, complete mess.
Yeah.
And I always told myself, like, I could never be like that. And no matter what happened for all my party years, whenever something happened and somebody called me, I showed up. And maybe I couldn't talk.
Right.
Maybe I couldn't, like, keep my eyes open, but I was there. And
did you have to weed out all of those people to make your life easier? Or
well, it really wasn't the people around me. I was going to places where I felt like I was comfortable. You know, okay. Considering the fact that I was running, you know, with as a broken boy, mm-hmm. and then when I, you know, started drinking early, and then when I started to go into clubs and bars, I would go to clubs and bars where it was kind of accepted. Where it's dark, you know, like a lot of bars, like you go into a dark bar that has one bartender and a jukebox and people are there for 10 hours, chances are everybody's doing blow.
Right, you know what I'm saying?
You could only drink so much before you just like, you know, and that's where I found myself. But I found myself there all day and all night,
you know. Okay, so now talk to me about your love of animals. Where did that start?
So my love of animals started, I remember as like a really, really young, I forget how old I was exactly, but I rescued a cat out of a tailpipe of a car, a little cat, and pulled him out by his tail. And I called my grandma and I said, Beppe, I just rescued this cat. He's like a little one. And she was a cat lady. And mm-hmm. she was like, I was like, you know, what do I name this cat? And she's like, well, Michael, you better name him Lucky because he's lucky that you pulled him out before they started that car. So I always had like a love for dogs. I remember a couple of times I came home with these dogs that were loose on the street that I found. They all got returned to their owners. But I never forget there was this one chocolate lab that I was obsessed with.
Mm-hmm.
He was just, he gave paw, he sat down, he laid down. He was so well behaved in the house. And my father was like, this is somebody's dog.
Yeah.
So I went around the whole neighborhood and then I started to see missing posters. So I took them all down. So nobody knew whose dog it was. Yeah, so I was walking around with the dog. And then we had the dog for like 3 weeks. And then when we brought it back, we reunited it to the family. And, you know, it felt good doing that.
Yeah, but like, I always seeing how happy those people
were? Yeah, just like, yeah, they were happy, but the dog was even happier.
Aww.
So it made me feel good. You know, like, thanks for letting me have your dog for three weeks.
But that's interesting because, yeah, obviously it made you feel good and gave you a taste of what it's like to see how excited a dog is and how to treat a dog really well.
Yeah.
So, okay, so what made you want to start your foundation?
I was, like I said, I was lost and I was broken. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that when I changed my life that I had to make a complete change. So on March 26, 2016 was my first day of recovery.
Okay.
And I started to search, like, what's going to work for me? And I spoke to this guy, Austin, his name is Sober Evolution. He's the only one who answered me. And I said, hey, listen, man, I've been running for 13 years and I just need some advice. Like, what do I do? And he was like, listen, if you're not going to go to a program, he's like, you could do this on your own. He's like, it's going to be very difficult, but if you want it, you could do it. Mm-hmm. He's like, I recommend that you find some type of motivation that works for you. You need to listen to it. You need to process it. You need to think about your life. And I started to search motivational speeches because I never listened to it before.
Sure.
And I remember that there was like the first three of them. The first one was like this Poindexter white guy. And I was like, there's no way he's going to inspire me. And the second one was called Legacy. Mm-hmm. And it looked like a guy, like 50 Cent on the cover, this black shredded man. I was like, what is this? And it's a speech by William King Hollis. And that speech changed my life. Right there, it said word for word, when you work for a purpose will work for you. So knowing that I had to find a purpose, I searched for one.
Mm-hmm.
I started to do some volunteer work, working at a shelter called Husky House. And I started to volunteer for a place called Goats of Anarchy.
Okay.
Right? So when I was up there, I was working with shelter dogs and then also sanctioned animals. So when I seen the difference in it, I started to feel at home. But I started to feel more home on a sanctuary than in a shelter.
Explain the difference.
Well, shelter is ran, you know, the rooms are, you know, when I look at a shelter, it's cages, you know, it's bare, it's cold. And there's just a couple of people there. Most people don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what
it's
they say,
it's
a job for them, or they're volunteering because their wife's volunteering, or you just say like, they come for the first week and then they lose the love for it because they see it. It's not easy to work in a shelter system. It's heartbreaking.
Right.
You leave there, like you said, you rescued your first dog. After one day, you were crying.
Yeah.
You know, do you continue?
And I still hate to think about
yeah,
the
but
dogs that
would
are
you
left
like to go work there for the rest of your life? Like, it would be miserable.
No.
So when I was in a sanctuary, it's just different people. but the animals are so much better taken care of, and it's done with love. Mm-hmm. Husky House is done with love, and everything about Husky House is a great shelter. It's not the ACC, but it's just still a shelter environment. You know what I'm saying? So when I started to get involved and I started to feel at home and I started to feel accepted, searching for a purpose, I wound up going to Husky House, and my ex asked me if we could foster a dog.
Okay.
They only gave the dog 6 months to live.
Why?
She was born with stub aortic stenosis, which is like one valve is like basically completely closed, leaving her heart. So for her to push air through her heart, she has to work like thousands of beats per minute to push it through.
It was a heart.
It was a pinhole.
Okay.
So I was like, you know, I'm not ready for it. Like if we lose this dog, I'm going to lose my sobriety. And she's like, okay. Then when I met her, it was completely different. I had gone in the back to use the bathroom, and I remember on the right-hand side, I just seen all these little German Shepherd puppies trying to jump over the cage, and here came this little waddling one, and she was, like, shaking, and I was like, is that the little one? And they were like, yeah. I was like, I'll give her the best 4 months possible. She was 2 months old.
So you knew that to take her, Matt, you were just taking her until she died?
Correct.
Okay.
And I remember, man, it just...
Did you name her, or she hadn't?
My ex named her, Honey.
Okay.
That dog completely changed my life.
Why?
I used to live for drinking and drugging, and I felt okay. Even though I hated the man I was, I still felt okay. Mm-hmm. But when I took all that out of my life, I felt lost, but I was searching.
Right.
So when I brought that dog home, now I had a new reason to come home, a newfound love. That dog accepted me for who I am. That dog was super happy. Dog gave me a purpose, and that's exactly what I needed. She kept me filled with joy and love and just being accepted and not judged by an animal, because they're never going to judge you for who you are. I felt like life was possible for me, and I felt at home. And all I wanted to do was go to work and come home. So then I realized, like, working at the sanctuary, that, you know, this may be a life for me. I really felt at home. I remember looking in, like, a horse's eyes and, like, I just seen myself and, like, just, like, through his eyes, and I was like, this is where I need to be. So I got a little more involved with the rescue. I started to do my independent rescues with no name and, you know, just rescuing dogs and trying
to
help.
And what was the mission there? To take the animals off the street, find them some safety, and then get them adopted? At this place you're talking about.
Goats of Anarchy?
Yeah.
Goats of Anarchy, she mainly rescues special need goats. So, okay. Like, we built, and again, I'm a creative builder.
What is special needs goats?
Like, right? A lot of, sometimes they're born with deformities and they need prosthetic legs or wheelchairs or, you know, yeah. It's, you know, it's really touching to see, you know, I tried to go vegan for that reason, because animals do mean so much to me. I mean, I tried. It's just, I can't do it. It depleted my whole body. It's just not for me. But just to see, like, a farm animal, you know, they're all beings, like, you know, like they all have a heart and a soul.
Yeah.
And to see the special need ones really start to be loved and cared for really made me feel like accepted, like as if I was a goat, I would want to live here.
Right.
You know, like this is, they're running around with wheelchairs and prosthetic legs, and the operation was beautiful. The people around it was beautiful. You know, she likes mainly special need goats, but she has done like huge rescues with like some sanctuaries that don't take care of their animals, whether it's dogs, dogs, cats, horses, llamas. She's expanded to everything now.
Wow. Where is that based?
It's in New Jersey.
New Jersey. Okay. So she has some land, I take
Yeah,
it.
She got some land. But I built some creative stuff for her.
Okay.
So when I first built her first one, I remember building an octogoat, I called it, where it was a trampoline, because goats like to bounce on trampolines, but I built like a stadium around it so that the goats could sit up on like bleachers and watch the goats in the ring. And then,
what?
Like, yeah, it was crazy. But that's where I felt at home.
Right.
You know, like I was still battling
myself. Doing
something myself.
Nice for
I was
these
still
animals.
In super, I was, I, my pain was crazy, mentally, physically, orally. You know, like now I'm sober, like I'm not resorting to drugs anymore. The pain's getting worse, you know, the embarrassment is getting worse. And when I would show up there, It was nothing but love.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't judge me. I told her what I was battling with when I first got up there, and she said, well, if there's one place that you need to be is right here.
Right.
She's like, I will never make you feel uncomfortable. And to this day, you know, she's like a big sister of mine.
So you have an amazing platform on Instagram called Pit Bulls and Addicts.
Yes.
Explain how that got started.
So, I told my father I was going to go from a zero to a hero, mm-hmm. day one of sobriety. And I was searching for a purpose. I found the purpose through a rescue dog. I rescued a couple of like independent little rescues. Like, you know, one time I walked into a backyard breeder. It was completely disgusting. It was full of trash. The dogs were coming out of everywhere. And I wound up taking all of the dogs from him, right? All the puppies. And that day.
He didn't mind?
He had no choice.
Okay.
I was taking him.
Yeah.
Right?
You're a big dude. Well, you could be scary, you know, I'm sure.
Listen, I'm a good guy. But if I have to, you know, I was there for those dogs.
Yeah.
After seeing the conditions, I wasn't talking about it. I took those dogs right from him, and then I brought them back to my job site. I put them in the bathroom, and by the end of the day, I had homed all of the puppies.
Aww.
And it really made me feel like a better man,
right.
You know? So I went home, and I told my ex, let's start a rescue.
Like, what we're working she with.
She's like, let's go. She, you know, she okay. was all about it. So my first rescue was No More Pain Rescue. My ex still has it, but we started to rescue, you know, enforce the base and trying to home dogs and just trying to do our part.
Mm-hmm.
I rescued a dog named Aria.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one who started Freedom Home, Pit Bulls and Addicts. Okay. What happened was a real estate agent called me up and said, hey, there's a pit bull locked in an attic on a house that we're going to be selling. If the dog is not removed today, she's going to go to the ACC. I said, you know, how big is she? He's like, no, she's tiny. She, you know, she's skinny. And I was like, all right,
I'll come. It was an owner that had just left it there? Or what?
Yeah, so supposedly the guy that was in the house was renting the house. He had done something to the child, and he was locked up. When he was locked up, the mother just took the child and left. Like, that, the lights were on. There was food on the stove when I went in there. It was like literally took her child and walked out and never came back.
Right.
So when I pulled up there, we had no experience rescuing. I thought I was going to get a little pit bull.
And did you know, by the way, how long the dog had been left alone?
No. I had no information.
Okay.
So I just, at that time, I'm like, yeah, I could go get this dog. It's not a big deal. We had a foster set up to take the dog. We just have to take the dog from the Bronx to upstate. When I pulled up to the house, first of all, I thought it was a setup. They, you know, they gave me the wrong address, and then because it was Road and Avenue or Road and Street, I forget what it was, but I went to the wrong address. It was a strip club on a dark block, and I'm like, here we go, we're gonna get stuck up or something. So I called the guy. I was like, where are you? He's like, I'm here waiting for you. So I was like, I'm on, you know, 138th Road. He's like, no, it's 138th Street. I said, okay. So I went there. When I got there, the upstairs was empty, but downstairs was a very dark party and very colorful.
Okay.
So it was the red color. So a white guy showing up, you know, with a little white girl. I showed my ex how to open up a knife, and she had a baseball bat in her hand. Okay, so she's standing outside of my truck. She's holding a baseball bat and a knife. And I knock on the door, and they thought that I was the police.
Oh, wow.
So right away, everybody's, like, you know, yelling and screaming. And I was like, I'm here for the dog. And then one of the guys is like, what? And I was like, there's a dog here. He's like, that's upstairs. Go upstairs. So it was like a metal staircase to get all the way upstairs. I was like, listen, I'm not going up there alone. Come with me. I'll get the dog, but I'm not kicking that door in. Somebody has to do it for me. So they wound up, you know, understanding that I'm really there for the dog, mm-hmm. that I wasn't playing games with them. And they were like, we'll get the door open for you. So they walked me upstairs. They kicked the door, and the dog's not there. The dog's up in the attic.
Oh.
And I could hear her up in the attic, and all I hear is like nails walking and, you know, some barking, and he's like, good luck. So I open up the attic door, and she comes running down, and she's like standing me off, and she's like skin and bones, and she's Aww. Defeated, and she's about a year old. It took me 45 minutes to get her into her slip lead.
How long do you think she had been up there by herself?
Probably about a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No food and water.
No food or water, but she wasn't taken care of. You know, the guy who did have her previously was a piece of shit. And she may have been, you know, being trained into fighting or, right. you know, just abused. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he was abusing his child, so he probably was abusing the dog.
Yeah.
But she was standoffish, and I was like, listen, it's just me and you, you know. So after a little bit of time, and again, nowadays it's different.
Did you have treats with you?
I had some treats, and you know, but she didn't want anything. She just stood me up.
Yeah.
But you know, nowadays I have way more experience. The approach would be way differently, and I would be out of the house real quick.
Right.
45 minutes later, I wound up taking her out of the house, put her into the car. We went and we got some McDonald's. We were giving her chicken nuggets. And as right before we get onto the turnpike to go take her to the foster, she starts to growl and show signs that she's very uncomfortable. So the woman who was originally going to foster her was 90 pounds. She had, you know, I wasn't going to put this woman in harm's way. So I just said, I'm going to take her home. I took her home, but I had other dogs of my own, so I wasn't going to put them at risk. So I put her in my garage. So my community didn't allow pit bulls at the time. So I used to, my daytime became her nighttime and my nighttime was her daytime. So everything was reversed. So I used to leave my house with her at like 11 o'clock at night, get her into the park, but she was biting everybody. You know, she put my ex in the hospital. She bit her foot really bad.
No way.
Yeah, she bit everybody's hands and stuff. So, you know, I was just, you know, I signed up for this. I'm just going to deal with it.
Okay.
So I built a bond with her. It took me about 30 days before she actually warmed up to me. And she actually, I never forget the time that she jumped on my lap and sat with me. I was in a little recliner just in my garage. But about 2 months later, I was working and I got a phone call from my office saying, you know, you have to come in. And they told me that they heard my dog in my garage. And if my dog wasn't removed, that I was going to be evicted. And I said, you know, just got to give me a little bit of time, please. I explained to them, you know, I was involved in rescue. It changed my life. I said, you guys didn't have a problem with me when I was sitting in my garage or in my driveway till 4 a.m. sniffing coke, drinking. Nobody had a problem. It's a dog. You know, I changed my life. This dog really, you know, I just can't give up on this dog. I'm trying to get somebody to help me. Just give me a little bit of time. And they were like, all right, we'll, you know, we'll give you a couple of weeks. So I called every single trainer. Nobody wanted to work with her. Every single rescue that says that they rescue dogs, nobody showed up. Even the big names now that everybody swears by these rescues, 8 years ago when I called them, nobody wanted to help me. So ironically, my friend Taryn called me about a job that they needed to have finished. And then she said, hey, we love what you're doing with the dogs. My husband owns a place over on Main Street if you're ever interested in opening up something. And I said, I need something. So I said, when can I meet him? And she said, you can meet him, you know, as early as tomorrow. So the next day I met him, and he was like, you know, it's really an honor and a pleasure. Like, I can't do what you do, but I could help you. He's like, you could build this backyard, and you could have the back room and a bar. And I was like, how much do you want? And he was like, I don't want your money.
Wow.
He's like, I want to help you. I said, okay. I said, I promise you, you will not regret this. And that's how it all started. You know, I was going to get evicted. I had a pit bull that nobody wanted to help me with. And I refused to put her into a shelter for those reasons that you discussed earlier.
What happened to her?
She's still with me.
She is.
She is.
What if somebody wants to come in and adopt her, though?
She's unadoptable. She's mine.
She's yours.
Yeah, I have a bunch that it's their liabilities, and you know, like I'm not the type of person that says that you know every dog is for everyone. Mm-hmm. Like you know, even my adoption process now, like if I don't like you. You're not adopting the dog for me.
That's good.
Because if I can't stand you, my dog can't stand you. My dogs have been around me since the day that we take them out of harm's way. They understand what love is now, compassion, family. Like my rescue that we've built from nothing has become something that I have 100% success rate. My dogs all live in peace and serenity. They're welcome. They're cared for before we care about ourselves.
So you're fine with if they don't get adopted. There's enough space now that you're saving them. Your first mission is to save them from the lives they have.
Yes.
The second mission is to get them adopted if they can.
Well, I only rescue abuse and neglect. I don't do owner surrenders. I don't pull shelters. Like if I have to pull a shelter dog, I'll do it. But my main mission and my purpose in life is to get them before they enter the shelter.
Right.
You know, so
lot of them are at their last moments too. I mean, it seems like from looking at your Instagram, these are dogs that have been
near death,
abused, neglected.
I have dogs that have their legs cut off. I have dogs that have been hit with machetes, hit by cars, you know, starved near death. Like,
how are you finding these dogs?
You know, I work closely with the NYPD. I work closely with the FDNY. Everybody.
How did you get that credibility, though? How did they?
I'm a man on a mission. When I said it, I meant it. And, you know, I just built up a reputation because I'm somebody who shows up.
So they call you now. They call me. Before they go to the shelter.
They don't want
to
bring the dogs to the shelter. They call me first. I mean, it's not a good feeling to say no, but nowadays, you know, I have over 50 dogs in my care.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Wow. Everybody's the first one to call me, but the last one to share my dogs. You know, right. 200,000 plus followers on Instagram. You know, I'm not a Facebook guy, so. But I'm all over Facebook. Everybody tags Pitbulls and Addicts.
Yeah.
But then when I look at my shares, it's like, so I just had 30,000 people view this and, you know, 25 shares.
Got it. Okay. So let's talk about the logistics. It's called Freedom House?
So their home is called Freedom Home.
Freedom Home. Okay.
Freedom Home.
And that is the location you're talking about that
Correct.
This guy gave you?
Yes.
What does it look like? How did you build it?
So when I first started, I took the back room of a bar, mm-hmm. and I just had the mindset of like, let me just build something comfortable. So I built their old liquor room. I transformed into four bedrooms.
Okay.
So I put dividing walls with tile, and then I put cages in the front.
And you're a handy guy.
I'm a handy guy.
So you did this on your own.
Yeah. In the beginning, it was everything was me. It was like I would work my jobs, and then at nighttime, I would go there.
And the dogs you had that you were rescuing or looking for homes for or whatever, you immediately put in there?
Yeah, well, Aria came with me. Mm-hmm. And then right after Aria, I got a girl, this Jersey girl. So I had two dogs in there.
How many were at home? Did you still have Honey?
Yeah, I had Honey was with me just into 2 years ago. So Honey gave me almost 7 years.
Yeah, so I just want to go back to that for 1 second. They gave her 6 months.
She gave me almost seven years.
7 years.
Yeah, she became just a major impact in my mission. Like, you know, she's the one who made me feel the way that I feel today. All of these other dogs are great. You know, like I have such a loving desire of like just being that man for all of the dogs. Mm-hmm. But Honey's the reason that I felt that I was this person. So
did she die of the thing?
Yeah, her heart exploded. Exactly what they told me was going to happen happened. She grew so rapidly that she was able to open up some passageways, but I knew she wasn't going to have a normal life.
Yeah.
I also didn't think it was going to happen on the day that it happened. She came in from a playgroup. I gave her a bone. She went and laid down and literally went to sleep. So.
Oh, so at least it was peaceful.
What? Yeah, I mean, that's all I really wanted, you know, like as a changed man, I know that, you know, we're not going to be here forever. And mm-hmm. I just want all of my dogs to, you know, be at peace into their last breath, and their last breath, I want to be peaceful.
Yeah.
So, you know, I rescue all of these abuse and neglect, and some of them just don't make it. They can't beat the fight. I don't ever question any type of medical, anything that's needed for them. It's 100%. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, like I spend a lot of money on medical. No questions asked. I have medical partners. You know, I built such a really good reputation and a relationship with my...
Do some of these vets want to do pro bono?
I only work with one vet, Bayshore Animal Hospital.
Okay.
Yeah. When I first went on my own, you know, after me and my ex had split up, and I had one of these little pugs that I rescued, a doctor said to me, like, this dog is not going to make it. Like, why don't you just use this money for another dog? And that was the biggest turnoff.
No.
And I said, because I don't want to. I promised this dog a fight, and we're going to fight.
Right.
That dog got 7 months, you know, like, but, you know, that's when I realized, like, hey, listen, you know, I'm not jumping from vet to vet.
Yeah.
So I built a really good, you know, self-built relationship with Bay Street Animal Hospital, and they do 98% of my work. If I have an emergency.
Do they give you a discount on
Yeah, they stuff? Give me a discount. I mean, okay. Listen, it they're not cheap. You know, right. I'm 100% discounted. But I pay for everything.
Yeah.
You know, this is real care. I won't use
but
a clinic.
But they're also in an emergency situation. They are listening to you, taking the dog in.
Correct. They've never asked me for a down payment. They've never said no. As they ask me, like, do you want to do this? Yes. Do you want to do this? Yes. The answer is yes, to the point that they don't even ask me anymore. They know it's called the Big Mike service.
Right.
You know, like, and, you know, in the beginning of rescue, they tried to explain to me what other rescue groups do.
Mm.
Not every rescue group gets them fully vaccinated from any type of vaccine that can go in. I want them to have it.
Right.
Like spay or neuter. You know, there's clinics out here that do pit bulls for free. You know, I've heard horrible stories of, you know, dogs being sewn back up with instruments in them, you know, just chop jobs. And I'm like, that's just not for me. So they do discount my service, but I also do pay for a service. But it's a service that I could count on, and that if I was a rescued dog, that I would want to be, you know, worked on by those doctors and the staff at Bay Street.
So I have seen a tour on your Instagram.
Yes.
Of Freedom Home. Freedom Home? Did I get that right?
Freedom House? Home, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So is that just little by little you kept adding to it?
I mean, yeah, I had no choice because, you know, when I first started rescuing, I thought that it would be you rescue them and then somebody wants to adopt. Mm-hmm. But then I found myself that people weren't adopting.
So how often are you getting a dog and how often are they getting in and out? What's the rate?
The in ratio, like I've turned down 16 dogs in 5 days right now. Right now my intake is closed. If there's a dog that's starving and skin and bones and that's what I rescue, I will do what I have to do.
Yeah.
But you know the adoption rates aren't high. You know, everybody
Especially for pit bulls.
Correct. But it's not only pit bulls. I have a dog, Summer, with me for 5 years. She's a Dutch Shepherd mix. Like, she's getting gray. And it's sad to me because I don't rescue them to grow old with me. I rescue them to give them an opportunity to live a second life that they always imagined. I always think about how I felt as a broken boy, and I know that that's how they felt when they were, you know, living in those kind of situations. And I know where I am today, and I just hope that one day that they would land that, you know. Yeah. But, you know, I kind of came to terms of understanding that that's not really how it is. A lot of people for social media, everybody wants that dog when you first rescue them.
Yeah.
And one of my rules is that I will not adopt a dog out unless the dog is rehabilitated and medically approved to go home by my doctors.
Right.
When that time comes, the people have now forgotten about that dog.
Sure, of course.
So, you know, I just kept on expanding. When I first started this mission, like I said, it's in the back of a bar. I was an alcoholic, fresh in recovery. I used to walk through the bar to build this mission. During the pandemic, the bar closed down. So I took over the bar.
Oh.
So then I built out the bar. I took over a storefront. I'm building that. And I built the yard. I built the yard three times. In the first time I built it, I remember sitting in the yard on June 6, 2017 and explaining this vision of creating a safe haven that if I was a rescue dog, how would I want to live?
Mm-hmm.
And my father was beyond proud of me. It was an empty lot overrun with garbage and just all weeds, and there was trees everywhere. And I just had this vision, and I told my father, I'm ready and willing to do this. And I meant it. I built it. And it was all self-funded. So what I did was I took $5,000, my last $5,000, and I called my lumberyard, and I asked them to give me all of their scraps and all of their garbage that they mm-hmm. couldn't sell. And they did it. They gave me $5,000 worth of garbage. They dropped it off in the back of the lot, and I started to build. And then throughout the years, I realized that my build wasn't going to meet the needs of all of the dogs, because if I have dogs out in cages and there's dogs in the yard, they're all going to be barking, and then the neighbors are going to start complaining. I got, in 2018, somebody threw a cocktail and tried to burn me down. That was an eye-opener for me.
What do you mean?
I mean, I didn't come out of addiction with anybody looking for me, so it wasn't done from my past. It may have been somebody in the neighborhood that
didn't like
pit bulls or didn't like what I was about and mm-hmm. didn't want me there. But, you know, the Austin investigator showed me exactly where it hit, where it sparked from. And, you know, I remember.
Was it in the middle of the night?
It was in the middle of the night. I left that place on camera at 11:47. And it went up at like 3 something.
Were any of the animals hurt?
No, my dogs, everybody stays inside. You know, even to today, they have, like, you know, I've built some outhouses. I built a building in the yard, you mm-hmm. know, but nobody ever stays out loose.
Yeah, but had somebody not gotten there in time, the whole place would have been burned.
The fire department's right around the block.
Oh, perfect.
You know, when the next morning when I pulled up, because, you know, I was like, what is going on? They actually drew guns on me. They thought that I was the arson.
Oh, wow.
You know, that I was the one who lit it up because it was my place for whatever reasons. And then I said, listen, put your guns down. Let me go check my dogs. I don't have many inside, but let me check them, and then we could discuss this. So I went inside. My dogs were okay. Everything was okay. But I looked at my place, and I was like, this is my dreams have just been burned down. And I remember standing there and saying to myself, like, this, do I let this go and go on with my life,
right,
or do I rebuild? So they burnt one of my kennels down and a tool shed. You know, they uh-huh. burned all my tools, $35,000 worth of tools, oof, and my first kennel. And I said to myself, I'm going to build better, and I'm going to come back. So
you learned from
they
it.
Built, they burnt down one, so I built two, right? And I built it different, right? So I learned from that. And then as I got, you know, more passionate about what I was doing, because now this truly has, like, it's not that I was just searching for a purpose anymore. It was like, this was my reality. Like, yeah. You know, this is what I'm up against. And I just continued to build and to meet the needs and to understand what rescue dogs needs.
Yeah.
Like, so now you see my place, you think it's beautiful, but, you know, it's because I put them first. Mm. You know, like, my dogs eat before I eat. You know, I also realize that most of rescue is all volunteer-based.
Mm-hmm.
I compensate.
Right.
So anybody that's working for me is taken care of. And the reason being is because if I want them to take care of my dogs, they can't work full-time jobs. This is their full-time job. So how are they going to be able to survive?
And are you looking for people to work there that understand the dogs and you? I mean, are they former addicts?
Well, first of all, they it's not only addicts. It's because, like, you know, I'm not only an addict. I was also a broken boy. I'm a broken human. And I do understand that change is possible. So I will work with anybody, but I also have zero tolerance.
Okay.
You know, like, I'm about rescue and rehabilitation. I'm about being a good human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people that come to me, you know, they come and they go, you know. I'm always looking for good people. And, you know, I always offer, you know, a fair pay. I wish I could pay them more because they deserve as much as I could give them. But I make it fair enough. Hey, listen, if you work a lot of hours, you're going to have a nice paycheck, you know.
Right.
As far as the addicts go, when I first started doing this, I tried to, like, pull addicts towards me.
Mm-hmm.
And my way of recovery is, like, you know, I had no choice. I had no insurance to go to rehab. I found a purpose, and this is where I got, where
right.
I am today. I don't want no victims. I don't want, you know, anybody that's in it for the wrong reasons. A lot of people think that, you know, you just get involved with animal rescue, and it's just walking dogs or playing with them or posing for pictures. It's the complete opposite. Like, you know, we scrub our rooms by hand. Our dogs live a life that, like, if I had a child, that I would provide for my child. And I was raised by amazing parents. So mm-hmm. it's just, you know, instead of me having children, because I don't have no children, this is the care that we take care of our animals. So they live in complete cleanliness. Like, we do our laundry every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Our dogs are very well taken care of.
So, all right, you said you have over 50 now? Is that how?
Yeah.
How many? And how many rooms do you have there?
Bedrooms, I have, like, in my outside run, I have 5 condos.
Mm-hmm.
I have 3 outhouses. I have a trailer that I built into a dog room. I have 9 bedrooms, 11. I just added 2. So 11 bedrooms. I have 4 kennel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
I have 1 community room that has 6 dog cages in it. I have
dogs housed together?
I have 1 dog that's unadoptable. She was a rape victim of a
what?
Breeder.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Like, when they went in and they raided the house, they found rape chairs, like, where they, like, would hold her down and do their
God.
Business. But she was traumatized. She hates men. So we did adopt her out once. She went underneath the deck and stayed underneath there for 3 days. The people had to take their deck apart. And
no
we went
way.
And we took her back. But she has a little service dog named Sunny. So they stay together. But the rest of them, you know, I don't keep any dogs. During the day is a little bit different. I put dogs paired up. But at nighttime, for the safety of all,
you know,
not only the animals, but also for us, because, you know, animals can't speak. We don't know if they have a little beef going on.
Yeah, yeah.
If something happens in the middle of the night and we walk into a dog killed, I wouldn't be too happy.
So what's the day in the life? You said you get there at 9.
Yeah, we start at 9 a.m.
And how many people are working there right now?
Right now we currently have, you know, on a everyday basis, at least 5 people running in the morning, then in the afternoon a couple more coming, and at nighttime probably about 3.
Okay, so someone's always there.
But those are workers.
Until, yeah.
Those are workers. I also have...
But do the dogs get walked, like, around the block every day, or they just go into the run?
No,
like,
we have play groups that could play, like, really large groups that could play together. So I focus more on the singles for walking.
Okay.
You know,
you mean the dogs that can't play?
Yeah. So if they're a dog that goes into a play group, they won't be worked first. They won't be walked first.
Got it.
Right? So I have several dogs that are not dog friendly. So those dogs are always out. But I also need people that want to walk dogs.
Yeah.
You know, so we focus more on the play groups and the individual walks first to
right.
satisfy them. I have one dog walker that comes in, and he'll walk every single dog that needs to be walked before 1 o'clock. Then he leaves at 1. He comes back at 4 and he works 4 to 8. So he does a split shift. He takes care of his kid as well. Mm-hmm. But he's like the one that we count on to walk those dogs mainly. But then I have people that come in throughout the day. I don't know if they're coming. I don't know if they're going. So when they come and they're like, hey, I'm here to pick up Star. You know, Star goes out for the day. Hey, who's next? And then we just put them back into the rotation.
And do you foster dogs from there?
To be honest with you, I'm not foster based.
Okay. Why? Because you don't believe in people?
Or? I don't trust just anybody. But when I started this mission, I didn't know much about rescue. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was a drug addict my whole life. I was a contractor. I didn't like start a rescue because I was working with rescue. So I just thought that I rescue them and I'll take care of them and find them homes. And the more and more that I learned rescue and people, I don't really trust many people, especially like the people that say like, I want this dog. And it's like, okay, but I don't know anything about this dog.
Yeah.
That's fine. We'll work it out. And then the second that the dog growls or the dog snips at somebody or, you know, runs out of the house right away, it's like, we're dropping this dog back off. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I don't have time for that. So I'll take all the problems. We'll figure it out. We'll learn the dog and we will hopefully place the dog with the right family and they don't have to worry about this.
How often are people coming in to look at the dogs to potentially adopt them?
I mean, if it's puppies, they're there the second I post them, you know. Dogs that come in with stories, you know, like I said, when they're rehabilitated and ready to go, often forgot about. I would say that I have somebody potentially looking for an adult dog maybe once every 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I've seen you do like, not fundraisers, but a dog adoption days, right? And how do those
We just started doing it. Like I said, you know, like I wasn't familiar. And, you know, for a long time, I wasn't a nonprofit. I was independent. So, like, I thought that I wasn't able to do some things. And then Then I became a nonprofit, broken. And when I became nonprofit, it's another thing with society, is that society will judge pitbulls and addicts right off the jump. So they declined my nonprofit status, that name.
Because of the name.
Because of my name. So that's when I started Broken Souls Rescue and Recovery. So now that I thought that I was a legit rescue, I can go out and start hosting events. The events are okay. You know, like I've had, you know, maybe 4 adoption events and maybe got 6 dogs homes. So like, you know, this year I do plan to step that up a little bit. But I also offer something different. I also tell anybody who's looking to adopt a dog, come down and meet our dogs.
Yeah.
Like, I want you to rescue a dog. I don't want you to rescue a sad story. Mm-hmm. All of our dogs have sad stories. Like, forget the story. Come down and see what dog works for you.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have dogs that, you know, will work for basically anybody. But I just think that being in New York is a little bit different. I think that if I was, like, upstate or somewhere where just the people are different. Like, I'm in Staten Island. It's, you know, everybody wants that perfect dog.
Yeah.
You know, upstate, and, you know, I'm finding more and more, like, because now my outreach is getting, you know, bigger. And, you know, like, now it's like I just drove an old man, Max. I had a dog that had a tumor hanging off of his neck when he was rescued. We cut it off. We rehabilitated him, got him socialized, and he sat there for months. I put out a story. This woman was like, I would love to adopt him. My car's not too good. I'm up by Niagara Falls. I was like, I will bring him to you.
Oh, my God.
So when I went up there, she's
hold
like,
hold on, hold on. How did you do enough research on her to know that you weren't going to drive 11 hours or whatever?
No, we, well, first of all, I spoke to her on the phone. Mm-hmm. I looked through her Instagram. Her dogs were very well taken care of. Okay. She was like that dog mom. She orders Bark Box. She was very in tune with her dogs that I could see.
Got it.
She was a single mom. She lived with her daughter. We do a video FaceTime where we make them walk through the house. Walk through your house, and then when we look at it, it's not that I'm looking to see if you're clean, right? Because everybody could hide anything. You could make your house look immaculate.
Right.
I'm just looking at, is the place a disaster? Is it filthy? Like, you know, just look at little things, right?
Right.
And but the most important thing is that the yard. So like if they don't have a yard, it's a different story. But she said she had a yard, so she would have to FaceTime and walk around the yard so I make sure that everything is safe and the dog's not going to get out.
Right.
So after I seen all of that, I said, okay, I'm going to drive the dog up. We left the night before, dropped him early in the morning. I did the introduction between him and other dogs. I met her. I watched her walk him. And when it was time to go, I said, listen, I'm going to go to Niagara Falls for a couple hours. I'm going to spend the rest of the day here. I want you to call me and tell me that everything is good before I go home.
Right, right.
So, like, when I get there, you know, I already know what I'm walking into. You know, the house was great, you know, and her backyard was great. That's all the dog needs. I'm not looking to see, you know, anything else. Like, I don't care if you have dishes in the sink. I don't care if you have clothes on the bed. I don't care about none of that. That's your home. It's just the home that you're bringing another dog into.
And
is
how
that
did
dog?
It go?
It went great. It went great.
And you never had to hear from her again.
No, now we hear just now. Now we build a lot of relationships with all of our. Like, I mean, it's very important to me to stay, you know, very close and connected with my, with all of my adopters, because like, if something happens to my dog and you can't cover it,
I'm gonna cover it. Yeah.
It's not, you know, like, I'm gonna make sure that my dogs are okay. When we rescue them at Rock Bottom, they get a promise.
I love that. And I love that when you walk into the home, you have that leash wall.
Yeah.
Where you take, is it the former leash that they
came
with?
So whatever ones have a leash or a collar, we take it off, we give them a new collar with a new leash of life.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you think that even these dogs that are, I mean, they're getting out at least once a day, right?
Four times.
Okay, great.
And my dogs go out minimum of four times.
And they're eating well and they're happy. So if they are not being rehomed immediately, they are happy.
Yes.
And well taken care of.
Correct.
Let's go through a couple stories of dogs that you really want to see adopted that have been forgotten there. That could be adopted.
Yeah. So one of the dogs that really always stands out is Casper.
Mm-hmm.
Casper was rescued 3 years ago from the ACC. They were going to kill him. They labeled him aggressive.
Okay.
Okay. I had this girl, Vanessa, was sending me him for a week that he was on the list. And the day before, she sent me a video of him at his kennel. And he was like looking out and he was down. And she was like petting him through it, and she wrote me a message that, you know, he hasn't been out in 4 days. They're going to kill him tomorrow, and he's deaf. He's not aggressive. And I was like,
she worked
I'm
there
coming.
Or she was just
she was a volunteer there.
Volunteer.
And I was like, I'm going to come get him. Like, I can't let this boy get killed. So when I got there, they were like, you know, you have to watch. We need certain people to take him out. You know, they were just like telling me everything that I – like, as if I was a normal person, why I wouldn't rescue him.
Right.
And then I was like, listen, take this dog out and put him in a yard with me. And finally, they took him out. He hadn't been out in 4 days. He came into the yard, came right up to me and sat down. Mm. And I said, okay, can I sign my paperwork and get out of here? So Casper just likes to play, but he's vocal. You know, he has a high prey drive because he's a pit.
Mm-hmm.
He's deaf, so which means that he's special needs. When he plays, he... But he's reactive towards other dogs. That doesn't make him aggressive.
Right.
You know, that just makes him a little special.
Yeah.
You know, you have to understand these dogs. Not every dog, especially dogs that have been, you know, thrown away like trash, are going to, you know, trust another dog, you know. So Casper's been with me for, I think, about 3 years. He's a white boy. He's white, he's deaf, and he's beautiful. He's got such a loving personality that all he wants to do is either play or sit in front of you and look ahead. He doesn't know that you're behind him. He loves to be, like rubbed. Like, he falls down. It's like a beautiful, beautiful experience when you could actually be a part of it.
Yeah.
Knowing he was going to be killed for aggression, he's not aggressive. There's nothing aggressive about
it. So he would need to go into a family that does not have another
single
dog.
Pet home, loves children, loves humans, and he's just an easy dog. He's non-destructive.
How old do you think he is?
About five.
Okay.
You know, he's something else. Like, and again, you know, when I took that dog, right, my intentions were not to have him grow old with me.
Right.
It was to find somebody who wanted a special needs dog.
Mm-hmm.
I rescued a special needs dog, and it saved my life.
Mm.
So I have a thing for special needs.
Right.
You know, I have dogs with two legs. They're mine. But, you know, like, I took those dogs in because who would want a dog with two legs?
Right.
I want a dog with two legs. Who would want me? But now I want it myself, you know?
Right.
So special needs and me, even with special needs children and special needs adults, like, I just have a real soft spot for special needs. I thought that it would be an easy adoption. Get him out of harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
Get him safe. Learn him a little bit and place him. You know, at the time, I had my platform wasn't what it is today, but I post him today and I get no action. You know, it's like he's just looked right past. But if I said he was going to be euthanized, he would be adopted.
Right.
And I refuse to play that role.
Right.
No dogs in my care will ever be at the risk of being euthanized.
Do any of the dogs you have really get anxious every night when they have to go back in their
Not
cage?
Not one of them.
They love their home.
I say go home, and they run home. Aww. They all wait on their bed. Even the cage dog. Like, again, I didn't build this to keep dogs in cages. It's just that I really rescue abuse and neglect.
Yeah.
Here in New York, there's a lot of abuse and neglect. Mm. I am one of the first ones that people call. When they send me that photo and I get it and I'm like, I'm rescuing that dog.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's it. I don't ask questions. I don't have to ask a partner. I don't have to ask anybody. Not worried about money. I have a vet that's right behind me. Mm-hmm. I have people that are right behind me. I am the founder and operator of my organization. I don't got to ask no questions. I do what I have to do.
Right.
So if I say I'm taking a dog, I'm taking a dog. And with that mentality, it brought me to having 50 dogs. But it's not even overwhelming for me, to be honest with you. I've built such a structured program. My dogs are like their cages are safe places. They're safe in there. So our dogs don't get anxious. They're not sad. Our dogs are happy.
Are people donating beds? Can people donate things?
Like, I have a wish list on it. There's a link in my bio on Instagram.
Okay.
My donations, I said, I have an amazing support system. I've built, you know, people like my work. They like to see what
and you
they're
have
donating
like $5 Fridays or
$5
something.
Fridays.
Explain that.
So $5 Fridays is when you could donate $5 Fridays, $5 to platforms. I use Venmo, Cash App, Zelle, PayPal, directly onto my website.
And the money goes to what?
That money keeps our operations going. So I do independent fundraising for, you know, the dogs that come in. Some dogs I'll make it like this, and some dogs, yeah, you know, it's a struggle. I've never itemized a medical bill. I just do it differently because I have so many dogs underneath my care.
Right.
So everything goes into the same bank account and I pay all the bills necessary.
But are there enough beds in all the cages? Are they all comfortable?
Yeah, every dog is comfortable. Okay. If we don't have something, I go and get it.
Right, okay.
You know, if we run out of food, I don't put up the urgent, our dogs are not going to eat.
Right.
It's like I go to Petco, I buy the food, and then I just say, hey guys, the dogs need food. When they see that, they buy food, you know. I actually just got an amazing donation from BarkBox. They sent us 140 bags of dog food.
That's amazing.
So that will last us 60 days or so. You know, the support is amazing. I have support from across the world.
So what do you think about Dave Portnoy and what he's done with Miss Peaches and his awareness of pit bulls?
You don't want to talk to me about him.
Well, give me a little bit of your...
Well, I'll be completely honest with you. I reached out to Barstool Sports when I first started, and they read all my messages. I've never got a response, number one. Number two.
To Dave directly just to Barstool?
Whoever runs his platform. I don't know if he does it. I don't know whoever it was. But they read them all, and I asked them for a share. I didn't ask them for a donation. I just said, can you please help me spread awareness?
Mm.
They didn't answer me. Then he becomes a superhero because he now adopted Miss Peaches, mm-hmm, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
You raised awareness for the breed. There was a girl who rescued a pit bull on Staten Island. I had no room. She contacted me telling me that she's going to bring this dog home, that Dave was going to help her find the dog a home.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. I said, she says, I have a big dog at home. She had a bully at home. I said, are you comfortable introducing them? Do you know what you're doing? She said, no. I said, okay, listen. It's late at night. I'm with two of my female volunteers. We're going to come, and I'm going to help you introduce the dogs. I don't know anything about this dog you're bringing home. I don't know anything about your dog, but I could tell you if it's going to work. I brought food, toys, a Kong, peanut butter, a bed, everything to set that rescue dog up for her,
right,
because somebody said that they were going to help. Okay. When I got there, she had a 100-something-pound bully that wanted nothing to do with this other dog.
Oh, gosh.
This other dog also wanted nothing to do with him. So I was like, you know, you're a female. She was a single mother. She had a son in the house or a child in the house. I don't know, son or daughter, maybe both. I was like, you know, I'm not going to put you in harm's way. Dave has said that he's going to help this dog. I could hold the dog while he uses his platform. You'll definitely get this dog adopted.
He didn't share the dog.
He shared the dog one time.
Okay.
He,
and who has the dog now?
Actually, Hank passed away.
Oh.
Yeah. For an unknown reason. He got sick. He was in the hospital for a couple weeks. We transferred him over to UPenn. And we did every single test, and there's no answer. You know, his body just shut down.
So. Okay.
So if you ask me about that, I mean, again, I think it's amazing what he does and where he puts his money. I don't personally know what he does. I don't, you know.
Well, I know he doesn't sponsors answer. Different shelters and rescues, and hopefully one day he will.
Hundreds and hundreds of people have tagged him in many, many of my rescues, and he has no interest. And with that being said.
Well, we don't know if it's no interest or just he's overwhelmed.
He knows who I am.
Okay.
He knows. The girl was in touch with him told him that Mike from Pitbulls and Addicts is going to take this dog. He shared the first post and then never heard from him again.
Hopefully so, he will.
You know, listen.
Do that.
I didn't get where I am today because of other people.
Right.
And I love that people.
Not, you don't need Steve, you don't need Dave Portnoy.
Well, I mean again, it would
Although
be a
ble-
it would be a blessing to have people that really want to help. Like I really do this.
Yeah.
You know, but again, I'm also not going to, you know, call people and beg people like
of course. You're on your own mission. I tried
in the beginning. I tried to reach out to everybody. I also tried to help everybody. Mm-hmm. But I got myself where I am today because of the work that I do and what I stand for.
Right.
So
it's commendable everything you do. I mean, it's amazing that you have gone from one extreme to the other and you are someone that people can look at and say you give people second chances and dogs second chances that have been forgotten. People don't believe in the dogs or the humans. I think it's a great thing. How can people help right now? How can people find you?
Find me on Instagram as Pitbulls and Addicts. Mm-hmm. I cross post onto Facebook, but I'm not active on Facebook.
Okay.
My website is pitbullsandaddicts.org. If you need to get in touch with me, you could write me an email. I have somebody who monitors that all day and all night. It comes right to me. And if you want to get involved, we're in Staten Island, New York. We invite anybody down to come see our facility, to see what we do, to show you what I consider real rescue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really rescue these dogs, and these dogs are really well taken care of. I just want to be a change in the what's known as a shelter system, but also in the change of an addict, you know.
And if anyone is listening that needs to find a purpose, that is lost, I think it's a great idea for them to reach out to you and volunteer. Forget the pay, because that's kind of secondary, but like reach out to you to find their purpose and come volunteer with you for free.
Listen, it's not for everybody, but what I could tell you is that when you come there with the right intentions and the right mindset that you're there to find a purpose and to change something in your life. Like, you know, what I've learned is that everybody that comes to me, somebody's battling something.
Yeah.
You never know what the next person is battling. Like 3 years ago, I almost took my life. People didn't know that I was suicidal. I was on my couch ready to take my life. It's not only drug addiction. We live in a world right now that there's a lot of mental health. Like, you know, everybody's dealing with something. People don't know where to turn to. So if you want some place to turn to, just, you know, I ask people to leave that victim mentality at the door.
Right.
Come in ready and willing to do whatever it takes for yourself. And you could definitely find yourself with a broken, with a rescued animal.
Right.
Those rescued animals, there's nothing like the love of a rescued animal.
And I will just say, when people are in that moment, I would imagine that if you just say to yourself, let me just get through to tomorrow, because that dog needs you.
Correct.
And it won't have anyone else.
One of the rules that I live by is that as long as I make it home every single night sober, I could take care of it tomorrow.
Yeah, I love that. Mike, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Misunderstood.